Get Pucked.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Get Pucked. I'm Matt, along with Vito and Dave. This is the latest episode, and let's get right into it. I want to start with something that came out a little bit now, I think maybe a couple days ago. Michael Frolik, he had an interview with TV Sport, and there's been some, quote, drama with this interview that he gave. So basically, he kind of shits on the Habs and says that he wasn't treated really well, wasn't given a fair shake, and essentially that the Montreal Canadiens ended his career in the NHL. Pretty harsh. What do you guys think about it, man? Like, do you think he should have gotten more looks? Should he have been in there more? He kind of brings up Corey Perry, who was acquired 5 days after he came in, and he's like, oh shit, Corey Perry's here, so now I'm in trouble. So what do you guys think about that?
Man, this is the NHL. Like, no offense. You sign a contract with a team. Okay, fine. They promise you, hey, you're going to play on our fourth line. You're going to maybe have a chance at the third line. And then, oh, wait, a week later, Corey Perry's available, and you sign him. Sorry. Play your way back into the lineup, right? He was on the taxi squad all year. He played in 8 games last year and got 0 points, 0 goals, 0 assists, 0 points.
He says because it was hard to come in cold, right? Like, that was his defense.
I get it. Fine. That's fair. But people have done it before. And, you know, that's on you, man. Train, do it, do what you got to do so that you're not coming in cold. And figure it out. You're a professional hockey player. You're in the NHL. Sorry, man. Like, I have no sympathy for players who I get it. It could be construed as a bad look for the Canadiens. Oh, they promised him some ice time. He didn't get it, whatnot. This is not Midget B where you draft somebody and oh, he has to play because his parents are in the
Participation League.
In the stands. This is you play your best players. If Michael Frolik would have, you know, stood out on the taxi squad, if he would have played well when he got into that lineup in any of those 8 games, if he would have stood out, can you remember a Michael Frolik game? I can't. Sorry. Next man up. It sucks for him. Absolutely. It has to do with COVID for sure, because I'm sure they in another year they could have flipped them and there would have been a team interested. Obviously, the team, the pool for the teams that were smaller, and you know they didn't want nobody wanted to make that move. Sorry, Michael Frolik. Have fun in Europe, and maybe you can make your way back. There's rumors that the Pittsburgh Penguins are looking at him. You know, so sorry, but I don't think this looks bad on the Canadiens at all. I don't think anybody within the NHL looks at what happened and feels bad for Michael Frolik. Really.
It was a special year. I mean, it was the COVID year. The taxi squad situation was allowed for teams to add players and just keep them there. He knew what he was getting himself into with the whole taxi squad and COVID. He was lucky to even get a contract. I mean, at that point, if you look statistically, he was on the decline already. And for 2 years, he, if I'm not mistaken, he was below double-digit numbers. So at this point, if he wants to blame Montreal, he can blame Montreal all he wants. Did they make him promises? Maybe they did. But there was other players there that were playing better than he was. And he did have 8 games, as Dave mentioned, to show himself and prove himself, and he didn't do it. Now, yeah, okay, he could have been cold, but so what? Every other player who was scratched and not playing for a while could have been cold as well. Corey Perry came there, and Corey Perry brought an element to the game and to the team that they had desperately needed, and Frolik didn't. Frolik was just another player. We're not talking about the Frolik of 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. Talk about an older Frolik.
No doubt. I think the main thing you said in the article was something to the effect of the reasoning as to why he couldn't get in was something to do with salary cap, which he scratched his head and was kind of like, well, I'm sure we could have figured something out, and they just didn't want to. And then, of course, when they did end up bringing him in, he's like, listen, it's he made the argument about how he came in cold and didn't really have the ability to get a couple of games, a couple repetitions in to kind of get his footing, and he would have, in his opinion, he would have been able to be a mainstay there. But okay, I was just curious because it was a
unique year. And like I said, he was lucky he got a contract, because if I'm not mistaken, there was teams that were just offering him a PTO.
Yeah. And also the Canadiens, okay, with all due respect, they went to the Stanley Cup final, fine. But they weren't very good in the regular season. So it's not as if there was a great stellar roster and he couldn't crack it. This is a team that probably could have used a good Michael Frolik. He got into the roster. They didn't like what they saw. The coaching staff, for whatever reason, didn't like it. And that's it.
Man, who was he going to surpass? Whose spot was he going to take, right? Ahead of him was, or who was playing was worse than him? Nobody.
No.
I agree. Bottom line, I was just kind of curious if you guys thought this would be another knock against the Habs. A series of knocks, right? You can go back to the Logan Mailloux draft pick where another knock, another bad look. You can go back to the handling of Kokkinemi, which, you know, he came out afterwards and said his things and wasn't a great look. So it seems like there's been a couple of these things happening, right? And now you could even say that the Caulfield being sent down and, you know, he took the MTL out of his, you know, profile and now he put it back or whatever the stupidness was. But like, just I'm saying in general, do you guys think that his words are going to resonate with the fans and the fans are going to be like, okay,
no,
I didn't think so either. I was just
kidding. It would have been a different story if it was somebody that plays in our top six that would say something like that or say something negative about the Habs than somebody like Michael Frolik. We forgot about him.
I think this is just a case of the media. Terrible media, not that I'm a member of them.
Awful media.
But this is the case of the media trying to fit a story into their narrative as opposed to the vice versa. I think that they already have the narrative. You're right. The Michael McNiven stuff, the Cole, like there's a long list, and they're trying to fit this story in there.
Say this for those who are listening, we even have that in their mind for a moment. Would you have preferred Michael Frolik over Lekkonen and Armia, who were on the fourth line, or over Corey Byron. Perry, or over Byron, or over, you know what I mean? Eric Staal. The answer
sometimes
to all
Eric
of that.
Stahl. Sometimes. I mean, early games, Eric Staal, maybe sometimes.
Well, yeah, but then we came to find out he had an injured back. But yeah, okay, I get it. But either way,
all right,
I wouldn't take Frolik over any of those guys.
Fair enough. I don't want to spend too much time on a, I don't even know if you call him a has-been Hab. He played his eight games, but whatever.
He was he's a never was.
Well, that's how he feels, that's for sure. Cool. I do, however, want to go quickly now into last game, because I think we got some stuff to talk about there against LA. I think we have a clip. The real main thing that everybody has been kind of talking about since it happened in the game. Show the clip and we'll talk about it in a second.
Outlet catches up with Evans. He's in onside. Dangles. Shoots. Scores! Oh, what a goal!
So, that was Jake Evans. Who somehow got the spirit of Connor McDavid just entering his body and just dangling the shit out of the defenseman and then burying it for the tying goal to bring us to the OT. So Evans had a phenomenal game, right? We can say that. I mean, he was pretty great most of the game. The goal was the cherry on top.
By his standards.
We'll give him a... I mean, I guess I'll give him a pass. I don't know about you guys about how he kind of got burnt there on the goal in overtime. But, I mean, how did you guys feel about, like, generally his performance in particular and anybody else that you think stood out?
Well, okay. So I was actually at the game yesterday, and I would say that he was one of the better players on the ice. Because one of the questions we were asking amongst us is, who the heck is standing out? There was nobody standing out.
It was a slow game.
I mean, Suzuki had some flashes, and you saw what this kid can do. And you know what? A lot of people tend to say that Suzuki's skating is questionable or it's not that fast. He's actually a lot faster in person than what you see on TV. Now, but with Evans, there's a few times he had a rush. He went around the defenseman, almost scored when he went, almost went around the goalie. Like, he had some moments where he looked and said, okay, he's on tonight. Out of all the players on the Habs, he was definitely on. So I would say I'm giving Jake Evans a pass. It was a good game. He was above 50% in the faceoff circle. Yes, okay, what happened in the overtime kind of sucks, but it was one of his better games. And this is the type of Jake Evans that I would like to see going forward, and I want him to improve going forward.
Yeah. I mean, look, what I love most about that clip is he looked just as shocked as everybody, as probably the fan base. I mean, when he lifted those arms, it was just a face of, wow, that worked. I've been trying to do that forever.
But, his arms weren't up in celebration. They were up in like, what the fuck? Yeah. Really? I did that?
How'd that happen? But great game overall for Jake Evans. And look, I said in jest something off air for you with you guys about how, you know, he got burned on that overtime goal. But should he have even been on the ice during overtime is another question. I don't blame him. What do you expect from Jake Evans? The guy's a fourth line center playing a third line role, played very well. He did exactly what you could have asked for him last night against LA. So I have no issues with this game. I think he played phenomenally for what
Jake Evans did. And talking about other players that stood out, what do you guys think about big boy Ben Chiarot, who also had a pretty good game, right?
He's been a lot better.
His stock's on the rise and everything.
He's been a lot better lately. And you know what? now he's starting to play like somebody who wants another contract next year. Whether it's with Montreal or with somebody else, I mean, regardless, he wants another contract.
He's you know, he had a bit of a rough, but he had to get used to shouldering the load, right? With no Edmondson, he has this, you know, it's like the weight of the world almost is on this guy's shoulders. Mm-hmm. I feel you could feel it with him, you know, for the first few games of the season. But I really think that he's you know, he's doing well. He's somehow scoring goals. I don't know how he's doing it.
He's tied. Isn't he tied for goal lead on the team? Or he's one behind?
Yeah.
He's got three, right?
It's unbelievable. And it's just he's already past his last year's total. I mean, he's doing well. Yeah. Defensively, he's doing everything. Look, the penalty, he took a crap load of penalties at the beginning.
I mean, his
of the
penalties
season.
Are just so bad.
And they're frustrating, too. It's not like the penalty that you're like, oh, okay. It's just like, oh, sure, come on. But we expected it that, you know, that's a part of the script that we could have expected at the beginning of the year. I like what I see from Ben Sherrod, and I think that when Joel Edmondson finally returns, I think it's going to take a lot of the weight off of his shoulders. Agreed. And he's going to be either a nice little trade chip or he's going to be someone.
I mean, I love it. I think the trade stock going up is just amazing for the Habs. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what their plans are, if it's rebuild or not at the end of the road, but I don't, at this particular point, see Ben Sherrod with the team next season.
The other player that played well, had 7 hits last night, and in my opinion it was his hit that changed the momentum completely for the third period, and saw that drive and that surge that you saw from Montreal in the third period. And I have a clip to show you guys.
Over the red line, and Kupari gets run to the ditch.
Damn!
Yep.
Romanov.
Yeah. Romanov.
That hit, watching it live and seeing it, you felt the ground shake. It was a heck of a hit. And I mean, it changed the whole. You saw how it got under everybody from in LA's, under their skin. They started to lose it. They started going after players. They started doing just getting off their game. They got off their game because of that one hit. You know, so I would love it if Montreal would just give this guy a little bit more rope and let him do his thing, let him play, let him, you know, find his game again, instead of trying to not diminish him, but keep the reins on him, you know? Like, just let him just fucking go out there and play. If he makes a mistake, so be it. He's young. Let him make the mistake. But the one thing I don't want him to be is conform to the way we want every defenseman has to be in the Montreal uniform.
I 100% agree. You know, a couple episodes we were talking about Alex Romanov possibly being sent down to the Rocket, just because, you know, it seems as though every little mistake that he made, he had to sit, he got the pressure of it, and he got the brunt of it. And I think that yesterday just goes to show how he could change the game, and he brings something to the Canadiens that is lacking, in my opinion. And I think that he should be getting all these opportunities. And again, what you said, Vito, is the most important. Let him make his mistakes. Let him learn, man. This is a throwaway season already, man. Try him out in everywhere. I spoke again about how I'd like to see him on the power play more, and try him out everywhere.
He should have been in the OT. He should have been in the OT. Instead, they went Petrie, Sherrod. No, it was Petrie, Sherrod, and then Petrie again, and then the goal happened.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just let him go. Let Romanov go. And if he makes a mistake in the OT, so be it. Because guess what? Petrie, who was the veteran guy, made a mistake on that overtime shift.
Oh,
and
for sure.
But,
you know what I mean?
We know these coaches, they always favor veterans, right? It's been the MO of any Habs coach ever, frankly, as far as I can remember, that they always go to their veteran guy when it comes to these like really pivotal moments in a game. But
that's fine. You know,
but is this all happening because he got benched? Remember they sat him out of game a couple games.
He's been on a tear since then.
He's the perfect example, Frolik, of what happens and how you react to certain situations. He could have folded. He could have stopped playing well. He could have, you know, regressed. And I think that he's flipped the switch and he's just become that much better since that benching.
He doesn't want to sit again. Yeah, no, you can see it in his face. Like when he drops the boom like that. Yeah, like this is his game. That's what he does.
Dude, he had 7 hits, and there was some players that went and hit him, and they fell. He's a solid guy. He has that, like, almost bone-crunching Emelin-style ability to hit somebody. Like, Emelin, when he used to hit somebody, it felt like their bones shattered. Like, he's just a notch below that, but his game is much better than Emelin. And there's much more potential and upside than in somebody like Emelin. So let players play based on their talents and let them do the things that they're strong at doing. No, I'm not saying that means let it be the Wild West. I'm not saying let it be the Wild West out there, but you got to let the talent go. If the guy's is a strong hitter and you got to focus on certain things, don't put the reins on him and say, no, we want you to stay back. You're just suffocating the player and what he can.
Well, you're not playing the player to his full potential, to what he's so good at. It's time and time again with players like Drouin, for example, where they try to make him a defensive guy as well. Like, he's supposed to, no, let him sacrifice it and just be upfront, right? That's his thing. So I agree with you. I think for sure you got to let these guys play. But those were standouts without question. Going to the opposite end now, those that really kind of shit the bed, I'm going to – let's not talk about Jake Allen, because it wasn't a good game for him. But carrying the load that he has to carry, I'm prepared to give this guy a little bit of leniency, even though those two goals that went on him, he should have probably
right, but he also saved two goals.
But so. he made some phenomenal saves. So let's not go him. Let's talk the actual players. I mean, for me, right off the bat, I got to think Dvorak. I mean, when's this guy going to step up? When are we going to see what was promised? When are we going to see the guy who we gave up a first and a second for? What's up with this?
Well, the guy who was promised is someone who came with a warning, right? He's not a second-line guy, I don't think, in my opinion. I think he's a third-line guy, best suited for third line. He's playing above his position, and you're expecting, I think, a little bit too much from Christian Dvorak. I think that he's been solid with what he brings, but yes, he can definitely bring more to the table. But
he has to bring more for what you paid
for him. He can't. No, but he can. He's not even on pace for his average goals.
No, for sure. For sure. I mean, he has to bring more, absolutely. But to me, I don't know. I don't know if he would be the guy. He definitely needs to step it up, but I don't know if he'd be the guy definitely that I would point to. I think still Jeff Petry is struggling on a shift to shift
massively.
You watch him, and this is not Jeff Petry. Talking about it coming as advertised, like, this is not the Jeff Petry we know. I don't know if the cup run took a lot out of him and he's exhausted, mentally exhausted. I don't know what's going on, but Jeff Petry, something has to happen with Jeff Petry, more so than, especially because they're so thin at the blue line. I think it's so important that Jeff Petry steps it up. Christian Dvorak, I don't think he's that far off from his ceiling. I really don't. I don't think he's going to morph into a first line center or even a second line center.
It's a massive overpay then, and it was a huge mistake. If you don't think this guy is going to be able to play as a second center on this team behind Suzuki, then what the hell did you get him for?
It wasn't overpay because he wasn't going to go for a first round pick. The Coyotes were trying to trade him all summer or off season, whatever you want to. Okay, and they couldn't. And what happened is that the Canadians got put into a crap position with the Kotkaniemi offer sheet, and dominoes fell, and they ended up giving away that first round pick. I don't think he was worth a first round pick. I really, really don't. I think the momentum for Christian Dvorak to get traded came late for a reason, and it's because he looked like the best guy available. Unfortunately.
But there was rumors that there was many teams that were interested in Christian Dvorak.
Why didn't they make the deal? He was available all offseason.
Probably they didn't want to pay the first round pick, but Montreal figuring that they had an additional first round pick, they felt they could have done it. But in my opinion,
a lot of teams would take Christian Dvorak, but would they take him as their second line center and trade a first round pick?
I think he's got the capability, or he's got the potential to be a second line center. I don't think he's the ideal second line center. I think it's similar to like Dino. If you have Dino on your third line set as your 3C, you're in very good shape as a team. I think it's the same thing with Dvorak. I think Dvorak can play as a second line center, but if he's on your 3C, that means you're deep down the middle and you're in good position as a team.
Yeah, but we aren't.
We're not. And you know what? At his price and all that, some people would say, okay, as a 3C, he's a bit overpaid. As a 2C, he's underpaid. So he's somewhere in that in between. So when you think of Christian Dvorak and what he was able to do with Arizona and play the big minutes and score some goals and you saw that, okay, if he's doing with Arizona, you'd figure that he comes to Montreal, he's got better wingers, he can do it. And I still think he can. I just think the recipe that was built, what we have on paper, is just not meshing well. It doesn't work. It's not working with this team. Now, again, you're talking about a forward core that is missing a back end to support them. So you have to factor all of that in. But I still think that Christian Dvorak has the potential to be an okay 2C. Like, okay 2C, a very good 3C. That's how I see it.
31 points in 56 games in the shortened season last year. 38 points in 70 games the year before that. Then the year before that, he was hurt.
Yeah, while playing with Lawson Krause and Tyler Pitlick. You
exactly,
know what I mean?
Exactly, 37 and 78. So suffice to say, when they got him, there was an expectation that when you pair him with guys that are previous 30 goal scorers, this guy should start netting up some points. Right now, he's got 5 points in 14 games. And I mean, he doesn't look good. Like, he's not passing the eye test either. I understand, forget his plus minus because that's stupid. But like,
But Matt, he was never going to be one that was going to pass the eye test. He's one of those players that does the little things right, and he was going to be a net front presence. He was going to pick up garbage goals. He was going to do all the right things. He was going to be a coach's dream while being productive. And that's what Dvorak was supposed to be. He wasn't somebody that's going to come in and dominate a game by himself or control a game or pull a move like Suzuki can do or anything. He's not that guy. He's supposed to be a replacement for Dano, in a sense, and statistically kind of is at the moment, except for plus minus, a replacement for Dano who can actually score more, but is not as defensively strong as Dano.
Right now, Dano is torching his ass in terms of scoring. So if this was the expectation, it is not really torching.
I think there's like a 2 point difference between the two.
I think he has 8 points.
Dano got 3 points against Toronto the other day.
Yeah.
That's like 70% of his total, of Dvorak's total. I mean, listen, I don't want to talk about Dvorak too much, but I'm just saying in terms of players that you guys think, so you got Petrie for sure, Devo for sure can play better. Like, is there anybody else that you think is like grossly underperforming, or are the rest doing what they do?
And the whole team is technically underperforming with the exception of like three players.
But who is like specifically?
David, you know, like, Savard. Obviously, well, like, that's the right.
Oh man, guys, there was people talking about him like craziest.
Even I didn't know if I had to feed you the name or if one of you guys were going to say it.
I mean, it was too obvious, right? Like, everybody knows David Savard is not playing well. I don't even think you need to say it. The guy should be in the press box. Shouldn't even be playing. He's been awful. He's been off on. You just hope that somewhere down the line he kind of regains the player that everybody, you know, thought he was, but. I don't know, man. I don't see
four more years of this guy, of this pylon.
I know.
He's playing like a guy who should be a 5-6, and we're paying him like he should be like a 4, but he should be a 5-6 with the way he's playing. And you know what? I could tell you this: he's not any better live.
He skates like he has cinder blocks on his feet. He's so goddamn slow. What
he looks, he looks a bit chubby.
He came back in a little bit too many poops ins.
No, maybe a couple of Stanley Cup celebration drinks, a couple of beers, who knows what. Yeah, maybe, I don't know. But he looks a bit thick.
All right. Listen, like you said, Savard was the easy pick. Now I want to talk about another guy who made an ass of himself, and perhaps this experiment should come to an end. Pezzetta. We got him up. He's in the lineup. The understanding was he's been playing like a beast in the AHL. He was like a little spark plug during the preseason. I had no qualms with him coming up when they called him up. So fine. Now it's a couple games in. I mean, what do you guys think of his game and specifically the little tilt he had? Well, tilt. They didn't quite fight. Him and Brandon Lemieux. Like when he came out of the box and chased him like a rabid dog all around the ice and then threw him down, he got called for that other penalty and got sent right back. Like, is it time to end this? Bring either somebody else up or what do you guys think about him?
I would say I wouldn't end it, but at the same time, I wouldn't care if he's gone either. You know what I mean? It's just one of those players like, okay, you're there, great, but if you're not, like,
but when you call a guy up, he's not supposed to hurt your team.
No, he's not. And yesterday. Well, yesterday he did. But to be fair, he was the first penalty with Brendan Lemieux was fine. When he went after him and Brendan Lemieux refused to fight, he should have let it go there. Instead, he knocked him down. Like, we don't know what's set on the ice.
He could have been triggered. Him and Brendan Lemieux dove back 14 feet like an Olympic diver. I mean, it was
So look, Pezzetta, you talked to Vito last few episodes ago about the Habs needing a bit of sandpaper, needing a little.
Yeah, he's the only one. Yeah. You're right.
And he's the only guy that comes in, and he comes in and does that. And when you call somebody up, you're right, Matt. When you say like when you call somebody up, he's not supposed to hurt the team unless he's in that role, right? That's his role, is to bother the opposition to do that. Brandon Lemieux, I'm telling you, is hated by everybody in the NHL. Everybody hates
absolutely
him. And not just for
Sean Avery.
Probably off the ice too.
I wouldn't go that far. The new Sean Avery, but he's not like. Okay.
He's not like.
I'm telling you that first penalty probably both shouldn't have been called, and even that second penalty. I mean, it was a dive and a half, and I'm sure that the Canadians, his teammates, appreciated it. I'm not for punishing. Again, if you send him down, if you cut him after taking two penalties like that, you're again sending the message that if you get called up and you do something like that, you're gonna it's everyone's gonna be playing tight because you're afraid that you make a mistake and you're gone immediately. That's not how you should play hockey. Pezzetta, everyone knows the role Pezzetta plays. He should be given a little bit of a leash to do things, to take a penalty here or there, and expect his team to kill it. And to their credit, they did kill it. The players appreciated him sticking up to Brendan Lemieux, because I don't know if there's anybody else that would have.
There's always these guys out there, right? These Hab killers, you know? You got guys that for some reason they just come in and they're able to rock the Habs whenever they play. Brendan Lemieux, unfortunately, seems to be that. I think he's got 5 goals in 8 games against the Habs. So, like, yeah, getting in his face made sense. I'm all for it. I'm just thinking, and I'm not expecting to call up an AHL guy and for him to make a big impact and put up goals and carry the team. But, like, at the same time, you want the guy to ensure that, yes, even if he's got to be a shit disturber, you got to flirt with that line. You can't chase a guy out of the box. And if it's obvious he doesn't want to fight you, you got to move on. Call him names. Do what you want to do. But you can't take a penalty like that. It could have gone far worse than it did. He could have made it. Could have been a goal against. It could have really just ended it right there. No loser point. It could have been bad. It was a bad move all around. I agree. I don't think you punish and send him down immediately. But at what point? I mean, I guess, does he stick around until a player comes back? You don't kind of shuffle and bring somebody else up? Does somebody else deserve a look, a paling or something?
Who would take his spot? You know what I mean? Like, at this point, like I said in the previous episode, you need sandpaper. He's the only one. Sadly, he's the only one who can bring it. Or who is bringing it? So you got to keep him. It's like,
yeah.
He had that one game where he had a bit of a fit. It happens. If it becomes a reoccurring thing, then it's a different story.
Well, first off, Brent Lemieux probably plays well here because his father's Claude Lemieux and probably told him tons of stories about Montreal fans and whatnot. But in terms of who to call up, I wouldn't touch Ryan Poehling until like months from now down the line. I would not touch Ryan Poehling. I would let him do his thing. Don't want to rush him back. Let him do his thing in the AHL, and let's see what happens down the line. You call him up when there's a necessity, maybe, or if you have a plan for him. You can't just call him up for, hey.
No, he's doing fine there. Yeah. Leave him be. Let that momentum swing keep going for him.
And speaking of call-ups, it looks as though Norlander would probably be up this week, maybe play Saturday even. If he's playing tonight, right?
Yeah,
that'd be game 3, I think, tonight.
Yeah, so I think that he'll probably play Saturday, to be honest, with the Habs, probably. From what I gathered from Dan Robertson's notes that he sends us from practice, he kind of gets the feeling that Norlander
would be in the lineup. I'd be very, very intrigued to see what he's going to look like out there. I cannot, for the life of me, expect him to see Norlander to do any worse than the other defensemen are doing presently.
Oh, I can tell you how he's going to look. He's going to look – the first game we're going to be like, oh, that's the type of player we need, a puck mover. By game 2, they're going to change the way they want him to play.
Yeah, Ducharme's going to break his soul.
And he's going to have to go back to Sweden to learn how to play hockey again.
Terrible. All right. Another thing, a little bit more, we'll say, life-based than hockey-based, but all the same. Just quickly, if you guys had any comments you wanted to share about Carey Price sort of breaking his silence about what happened and making that Instagram post, coming out and saying like he checked himself in. He obviously, we knew this, and he mentioned that there was substance issues there as well, in addition to mental health. I mean, I personally think it's a super brave thing. I think it's going to be a really good thing in the long run. Carey Price is looked up to by a ton of people, who might be going through things like this, and saying, you know, if a guy like him can do it, then maybe it gives the motivation for them to do it as well. I think it was, he didn't owe this by any stretch to anybody. He didn't have to say a word to anybody about why he did it. But I still personally think it was a really solid move on his part.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that anytime, you know, someone is in the position of Carey Price does something like that, it'll have a domino effect, you know, throughout society. And I think Jake Allen said it today best at practice. He said, you know, it just goes to show that it could happen to anybody. And it doesn't matter if you're, you know, the best goalie in the NHL, you know, no one's immune to stuff like this. So, I mean, kudos on Carey Price for sharing. He didn't have to. He did. Yep. And, you know, just the fact that he said what he said and why he was there, I think it means a lot to a lot of people. And you see a lot of people who are, you know, I have a lot of friends you know, in the radio and the media who are in the program, you know, in substance abuse and rehab programs and AA and whatnot. And they all seem to react favorably and saying it's a great thing, you know, that he came out and said this because it will help a lot of people get the help they need. So if they're saying it, I mean, for sure, then I'm all for it. And good on Carey Price. And you could just hope that he comes back 100% and better than ever.
I totally agree with everything they've said. But I will also add that just now everybody, fans, media, just leave him be.
Leave him alone.
Leave him alone. Let him do his thing. Let him continue on his path. Let his family be. Give him his privacy. Because if you do, he will come back better. And him coming back better is good for the game. It's good for Carey Price. And it's good for the Montreal Canadiens eventually. But all of that is secondary. What's important for him right now, what's the priority, is Carey Price and his family. Everything else is just secondary.
100%. 100%.
Yeah, well said. I was going to say, I mean, I don't even want to bring it, but there's already people with bad memes. A little town in Quebec, they had a boil water advisory, and they did a Carey Price meme, which is very tasteless. And I'm sure that it's going to be a pop up. They just posted it.
Well, you're always going to have. But anybody who does that, even if it's an entire town, anybody who does that shows their character, not the other way around.
Yeah, that's true. Very true.
No, that's the kind of thing, though, that when you look at Carey Price and you look at his personality and the kind of guy he is, and I mean, the cool, calm demeanor, I mean, he knew he was going to get it from both sides, people that applaud him and people that are
going to
say sup. He did what he did, and Carey Price is going to do what he always wants to do. I think at the end of the day, though, like you said, we can be hopeful that most people respect his privacy, him and his family, and he gets through whatever he needs to get through to become healthy as a person again. Like you said, hockey is secondary. We're all rooting for him. We hope he comes back soon. But in the meantime, I think it was, in fact, still a very brave thing that he did. And it's going to be overall, like Dave said, domino effects that are going to be felt throughout society in a positive way.
And he's been in this market long enough to know that he's going to have the majority of people that are going to be supportive, and there's always a pile of garbage somewhere.
You always have dejectors, always.
And say what you will about Montreal and whatnot, but I can't wait to see the reaction he gets when he comes back to the Bell Center for the first time.
It will be probably as close to the Saku Koivu coming back ovation kind of thing as you can get. As close.
I would say it's going to be, if anything, as close to when he got back, or he just went on the ice after that significant knee injury that, you know, Kreider caused, and when he finally got
that. This will be bigger.
This
is a guy who overcame a personal, like a significant personal thing, you know, like,
and also it'll be his first game back after the Cup run, right?
We'll also be happy just to see, okay, we got our superstar back, and it could only be a little bit better than what we've been watching. Exactly.
I wanted to talk again about our GM. Not particularly ours, but there's another report that came out that Bob Murray over in Anaheim is going through some troubles of his own. There was an internal investigation that was done over there that is going, I don't know if it concluded, but it's looking at things of he's overly aggressive, and he was saying comments to his staff, harassing them and whatever. We talked last time briefly about potential GM candidates that might replace Bergevin, right? And one of them that we talked about was Martin Madden Jr., who we all said is being groomed as the heir apparent to Bob Murray over there. Lo and behold, he's now been removed. I don't know if it's temporary or not, but the interim GM there is not Madden. It is a gentleman by the name of Jeff Solomon, who is assistant general manager, so it does make sense, but I'm still curious. Should we look anything into that, you know, boys? Like, if this guy was the heir apparent, why wouldn't you hand him the keys? Do they feel like he's not ready? Are they doing it in sort of a hierarchy thing, and this is just an organizational decision that they're not really going to be doing moves right now, so let this other guy go on cruise control? Like, what do you think about that?
Typically, when something like this happens, or when a GM gets let go, I know it doesn't normally happen that often during a season, but if it does happen, it's, you know, the assistant GM comes in and just fills in the shoes in the time being. Does it mean that the assistant GM is going to be the guy? Probably not. Most often than not, they still hire somebody else after the fact. It's probably what's going to happen. They're going to maybe offer to Martin Manning Jr. at the end of the season, but there was already rumors that circulated that if Marc Bergevin is not to re-sign with Montreal, that he could, that Anaheim was looking at him, but so was LA. So who knows what happens there? But the timing of it all, of all of it's pretty interesting when you hear all these rumors coming out and you're hearing that, you know, that, that Bob Murray's now gone and we still don't know what's happening with MB. And you're right, Martin Madden Jr. could have been the guy to take the place, but it's usually the assistant general manager who takes over in the time being.
I think that I don't think it was necessarily something to look into. I think that, you know, maybe they wanted to shelter him from, because, you know, the new general manager is going to step in. He's going to get all sorts of questions about Bob Murray and have to answer all these questions and whatnot. I think that maybe you just put a guy there in place right now for the season and, you know, you give whoever's coming in a fresh, you know, a fresh sheet, because it's probably not going to be a great end of the season for the Anaheim Ducks. So what's the point
of
bringing in a general manager, especially through circumstances where, you know, your boss is an asshole and he's placed on administrative leave. You know, there's a difference between, you know, being a drill sergeant and being tough on your players and just being a complete asshole where you have to be thrown out because you've created such a toxic workplace. I mean,
it's curious.
And I see a lot of people on social media kind of defending him, like, oh,
we're they're saying it's old school. That's right. I was just going to say, I read a bunch of things on social media. Oh, the new generation can't handle the old school way of doing hockey.
Well, look, there's something to be said about, you know, maybe there is a place to evolve as a hockey culture. But at the end of the day, there's a difference between old school doesn't mean asshole. You know, that's a Steve Jobs mentality.
Don't be a dick.
So I have to
bottom line.
Genius and creative people have to be dicks to people. And we somehow accept it as a society. That's not how it is, man.
I have a feeling we're going to see a lot more of this as the time goes on. We're going to see a lot more of this.
I think there's a reason Mike Babcock didn't get another job, because he too was creating a toxic work environment. Same thing goes with a guy like Bob Murray. Get them out of there while you can and bring in...
So is that not the concern we'd have if somebody like Patrick Roy would become the general manager and coach? I feel like behind closed doors, he's a lot of yelling.
Yelling is one thing. Again, it depends. There's a difference between a tough, yelling guy who yells, but then, you know, behind the scenes, you know what he's about. Exactly. And a guy who creates, from all accounts, a toxic work environment. There's a huge
makes
difference.
Sense.
There's a huge difference. It has nothing to do with soft or hard or old school. You could be old school and tough without being a complete dick.
Perfect. Well... you mentioned Mike Babcock. It's funny that you should say, because I've had some things I wanted to bring up in the next episode, so I'm going to save it for then. But just remember his name, because there'll be some interesting questions about him coming in the future. Final thoughts here, boys. Two names, two defensemen been floating out there. Two guys I think the Habs could really use. I'm curious on your takes on them, and quickly what you think it would take to get either of them. We have Samuel Girard over in Colorado, the Avalanche, and Eric Brandstrom over in Ottawa. What do you think?
Look, I like both of those guys. I think they should definitely make a move for either of those guys.
Should make a move for both.
Yeah, or even both.
What would it take? Would you overpay? Would you overpay right now for them?
Yes. Yes.
For Samuel Girard, I would.
I think for both, man. I think they're young guys, and I think you need them here. This is what the Canadians need. It's something that they haven't really drafted for. I think that's something that they absolutely need. I think that I would go for either or both if you could fit them. Girard has, I think, a $5 million cap hit.
I
believe. So I don't know. But Brandstrom is something absolutely that I would look at. He was originally drafted by the Vegas, if I recall, and he was
15th overall.
Yeah. So he has the pedigree, he has everything. He's someone absolutely, if he's available now, will Ottawa trade within the division, blah blah blah. Who the hell knows?
I'm just shooting it out there. So you would overpay. I understand I'm putting you on the spot to come up with a package. So let's just say, yes, you'd overpay to take one of these guys. Lolo.
I would overpay to take Girard, but I would figure out what the right price is to get Brandstrom and try to balance it. Like, I would negotiate a little more for that one, you know, and work a deal.
Girard, blank check, but Brandstrom.
I won't say blank check. It's not like I'm going to say, here's Suzuki for
Girard,
right? But I mean,
yeah.
To say that, like, I would negotiate or talk about some of our prospect defense that we have, if all of a sudden, you know, Bergevin comes to find out, or he knows that Jordan Harris is not going to sign with Montreal, then try to work something out there already. You know, like, there's certain assets that Montreal has that they can leverage and throw into a trade to acquire somebody like Samuel Girard, and I would be inclined to do it, depending on what. As long as it doesn't touch, you know, like, the main guys. I could come up with a package right now, whether it'll work or not, I'm not sure. but
okay, I'm pretty hit it before we close here.
I think Colorado would really like to get their hands on Drouin to match him with McKinnon again. So I would see that, and that the dollars make sense, 5.5 with Gerard's 5 million.
Not straight up.
You're adding to it. You'd be adding to it. And that's why I'm saying we'd be overpaying. You'd be probably looking at, you know, they're going to make a Stanley Cup push, and they got the cap space. So that's maybe Drouin, maybe a Lekkonen plus a prospect, plus a draft pick. It's too much. Baby. It's too much. It is too much, but it might be the ransom that they're going to ask for to let Gerard go.
I honestly think that depending on the way like Devin Toews plays, and you know they have such. I think that they probably just want to move him to get the way. I think a straight up trade.
I think so.
I think it might go, man. I don't know.
It'll probably be Drouin and something else. Maybe not Lekkonen, but even another draft pick because
it's probably
it'd be reuniting those guys together. But you're also looking at Gerard. They want to make Bowen Byram take that place. They have defensemen, exactly. You know, right? They want Bowen Byram to be the guy that's gonna take Gerard's role and making Gerard expendable. Now Gerard's having a bit of a tough beginning of the season. He's got 3 points in 8 games, and he's a -3, I believe, or a -4 or a -2, somewhere around there.
-7.
Okay, so even worse. There you go. So he's struggling, but just because he's struggling in Colorado, in all likelihood, he'd probably struggle with Montreal, but he brings an element that Montreal needs right now. And
32 points in 48 games last season.
Yeah. So I would pay a joint, only if we know, and in all likelihood, if Montreal is going this route, Drouin's on the move. If Montreal's going the route of a rebuild, I don't think Drouin's the guy they're keeping. And we've discussed that last episode. He'd be one of the guys that would probably go on a rebuild. So
honestly, rebuild or not, I think if you can make it happen and you can do Drouin for him pretty much close to straight up, I think you pull that trigger.
How do you think people would feel when they say that, wait a minute, you traded Sergachev for Drouin only to trade Drouin for Samuel Girard? Well, the Francophone fans would probably be happy, that's for sure.
Well, thankfully. We wouldn't have to hear a language debate there. But, okay, listen, I want to conclude it there. I think you guys had some pretty interesting takes about a couple of the topics. And so, really, the next thing is we're going to be meeting again, I think, at the end of this week. There might be 2 games to talk about between now and then. So, very eager to look forward to it. Very fast, 2 games on the docket. Do they win both, lose both? 1-1, Dave.
I like the matchup versus Calgary. I want to see what they could do. This is, I think, the game that you're going to have to circle. It's going to be an important game. If they could pull off a win here and then go off and face Detroit on Saturday, you know, you could start, could be the start of something nice. I think that Calgary game is going to show them who you're going to truly see the character of the Montreal Canadiens. So
maybe
give me a 2-0. Give me a two wins.
You know.
If they win against Calgary, there's a strong chance they win against Detroit. It's the first time this season that they'll win a back-to-back. But I'm going to say they're going to lose to Calgary and win to Detroit. And they'll win in overtime in Detroit.
Win in overtime. Wow. Perfect. All right, boys. Thanks very much. Everybody else, thank you so much for listening. Again, please, if you can, it would help. It would be great if you could like, subscribe, wherever you are currently consuming our media. And then we will hopefully catch you on the next one. So thanks very much. This was Get Pucked.
Get Pucked.